Thank you to both speakers for two splendid and splendidly rich papers. If you could come forward and sit here at the table, I would just make a few points and then we'll go to the questions. I think they worked wonderfully together, to the two papers, in this nice and lovely focus on the converted lay elite in recently converted areas. There are a few themes that I wanted to bring out first before we start the questions. The first one is a reflection on what I think is one of the most kind of welcome developments in the study of conversion and Christianization processes in recent decades, which is the fact that we're getting more and more away from the kind of old national boundaries when we study conversion. And this is something that I think early medieval historians are particularly good at, a lot better than historians of the later Middle Ages, and thinking more of a kind of centre-periphery dynamic than about these essentialist ideas of Slavic paganism or Germanic paganism or Scandinavian paganism versus Christianity. And I think that came out very nicely in both papers, especially perhaps in Professor Buatieri's paper. On that note, another thing that both papers talk about, and it's something that also brings back to mind what Chris Wickham was talking about yesterday, citing the Comaros on conversion being a colonial construct, that there is an element also of empire in both papers and of imperialism that I think would be interesting to talk about later, which is part of this centre-periphery dynamic. And the centre-periphery dynamic is also not unproblematic, and I think it's something that could be considered further. Another theme that came out is the status and activity of the missionary. And it's interesting, I think we have to be very careful about missionaries and think beyond the kind of missionary that's presented, especially in missionary hagiography, as in Ian Wood's book, about the missionary life, and think also of clergy who went outside of traditionally Christian areas to other places, for other reasons than a kind of burning zeal to go and convert the pagans. And that missionaries were also people who may have found themselves in uncomfortable circumstances at home or left their homes for other reasons. And I think about such practical matters when we think about the building up of the church in converted areas. Another theme which came out interestingly very much in both papers is the theme of monastic foundation and monastic houses. Because the monastic vocation and the missionary vocation aren't necessarily the most kind of obvious bedfellows. I think it's quite clear also from both papers what the attractions could be of a lay aristocracy, of founding monasteries. Very practical matters, so the question of stabilising landholding and the question of creating power networks, which are clearly marked in the landscape. But it's interesting to note that monastic foundations are not a central part of conversion processes at all in all cases. I mean, they're very much so in the kind of 9th century, on the 9th century edge of the Frankish Empire, but much less so in 10th century Bohemia, and certainly not at all in Scandinavia. Another point is, of course, the extraordinary distance which between the message of the gospel and the behaviour of early medieval lay aristocracy. This is especially clear, I think, in Ingrid's paper, and I wonder really if the admonitory element in Helion that you talked about would have been any different, you know, if the intended audience had been Christians for 500 years rather than a couple of generations. I think I'm pretty sure that an aristocratic audience in the Frankish heartlands would have had needed to hear exactly the same message. But this is also something that we have to be wary of when we read our sources, is this idea that especially Christian writers will often talk about conversion and Christianization as a kind of process of pacification. And it isn't necessarily that, especially, I think, in the case of the lay male aristocracy. But that's very much about the male aristocracy, and that's also another point in the second paper. That's something I wanted to ask you, is do you think... when you talk about the refoundation of aristocratic society, how did the role of women change, do you think, with conversion in these societies? That's the, and I have a question for Ingrid too, which also brings us back to Bernard Bayer's paper yesterday, which is, what do we do? I mean, we're told so often these days, especially historians, that we should be really, really careful about commonalities in Germanic, cultural commonalities in the Germanic world. And still it's striking, and this is again from the pictures that Professor Meyer showed yesterday of the extraordinary similarity between something found in central Sweden and something found in southwestern Germany, iconographically. And I think, and my impression is that, I mean, your paper was also interesting in that you talked about, you integrated a kind of literary scholarship about a vernacular text with a much more traditional historical thinking. And I think it seems to me that people who study literature are less careful about, you know, seeking out Germanic elements. And I especially, it might be interesting to compare the Heliand and the language about fate and other things like that with Old English texts. And I wonder, I mean, how do you work around this? Do you think that an idea of Germanic Christianity is absolute nonsense? Or you think there might be something to it? Anyway, that was my questions.